Judge E. Harris, Judge Bentley, the Honorable Judge Ede presiding.
Morning, everyone. Welcome to the Zoom edition of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. My name is Keala Ede. I'm serving as the presiding judge today. I'm joined by Judge Bentley and Judge Harris. We have two cases on our Zoom oral argument calendar today. The first is A241138 Alpha News versus City of Detroit Lakes et al. And before we begin, just a couple of housekeeping matters. The court granted a request by Alpha News to stream this proceeding. And so Alpha News is going to be doing that. There are to be no other recordings made of this proceeding. The court itself makes an audio recording that will be available on our website later this afternoon or tomorrow morning. And so the public is free to access that when it becomes available. Counsel for the appellant will have 15 minutes for your initial argument. Ms. Howell, can you confirm for me that you can see on your screen the clock?
Yes, I can see it, Your Honor.
Great. And Mr. Scoyles, as respondent's counsel, you'll have 15 minutes for your responsive argument. Can you also see the clock?
Yes, Your Honor. And may I make a minor correction? My last name is Ramsted Scoyles.
I apologize. Thank you.
It's okay.
And so the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And to Mr. Ramsted Scoyles' point, when you begin your argument, could you please state your name and who you represent and let us know how you'd like us to refer to you? With that, counsel for the appellant, whenever you're ready to begin.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Alexandra Howell, and I'm an attorney for Appellant Alpha News. You can refer to me as Alexandra Howell or Allie Howell if that is easier for you. May it please the court. In April of 2024, Senator Nicole Mitchell was arrested on suspicion of first-degree burglary in Detroit Lakes. According to the criminal complaint, she was caught in the basement of her stepmother's house, dressed in all black, and admitted, "I know I did something bad." Senator Mitchell has told a different story. She posted on her Facebook page the next day that she was only in the house to perform a welfare check on a family member with Alzheimer's. And through her counsel, Mitchell has criticized the criminal complaint for omitting important context. We are here today because Minnesotans want to know who was telling the truth. The legislature provided a tool for this exact situation in Minnesota Statutes, Section 13.82, Subdivision 7. The district court, however, decided that Subdivision 7 must not mean what it says. In clear violation of the legislature's intent and the statute's plain text, the district court added another hurdle by deciding that disclosure is warranted only when there is a, quote, true public benefit. Before I dive in further, I'd like to welcome the court's questions.
Could you point us to where in the district court's decision you identify that rule that it applied?
Certainly, Your Honor. The language for a true public benefit is on page 7 of the district court's opinion. There's also reference on, I believe, page 8 of the district court's opinion stating that it would be improper to disclose the requested data absent one of the three categories in subdivision 15 of the statute. So that's on page 8 of the district court's opinion, where the district court stated that this statute does not authorize the release of data the public finds, quote, interesting. It requires release of data that is necessary to dispel widespread rumor or unrest, circumstances that are not present here.
So here's my question about that. And I think you agree in light of your reply brief that the district court here decided a lot that maybe the court didn't need to decide, right? About the whether certain exceptions apply. And as I understood your argument in reply, there's no challenge or no argument that any of those applied. You're not appealing those parts of the decision, but yet the district court did that. So I guess my question about the language you're pointing to here is, did the district court also kind of maybe unnecessarily I analyze it under subdivision 15, like the other exceptions. But I guess I'm just wondering where you read that subdivision 15 applied to subdivision 7, as opposed to she found this wouldn't have met the standard under 15.
Certainly, Your Honor. I think the first part here is that Alpha News only brought this motion under subdivision 7. This has consistently been a request for the release of data subject to the requirements of subdivision 7. And the district court's decision, whenever it discusses or looks at the public benefit that Alpha News is asserting, and the subdivision 7 balancing test is basically comparing public benefits to private and public harms for the disclosure of data. Whenever the district court is looking and discussing and evaluating Alpha News's asserted public benefits, the district court is doing so within the lens of those other statutory exemptions like subdivision 15. And so the district
Can I
court.
ask you about that though? So in your brief on page 32, you acknowledge that your client is not, or you're not aware of any court that's considered what benefit to the public means in subdivision 7. And I notice in your argument just now that you obviously it's phrased as benefit and then ellipsis to the public in the statute in subdivision 7, but you are colloquially referring it to as public benefit. And subdivision 15 is entitled public benefit data. And one of the arguments you make throughout your brief is that consistent with normal statutory interpretation rules, the court needs to give effect to all of the provisions of the statute. So why shouldn't we conclude that the district court did not abuse its discretion by looking to subdivision 15 when that subdivision describes a category of data that's entitled public benefit data and gives example of that data as including information that will aid law enforcement. It also includes information that will promote public safety and dispel widespread rumor or unrest. Why was that inappropriate for the district court to consider in, if we accept your argument that the entire statute needs to be effectuated?
Certainly, Your Honor. Sections 13.82 and 13.825 are part of a large statutory scheme balancing the interests in privacy and law enforcement with the need for public accountability. And the fact that there are multiple different exceptions indicates from the structure that each should be treated distinct, and the fact that they apply in different circumstances and also have different decision makers. Subdivision 15 is decided by law enforcement. If law enforcement decides to release data based on those three criteria in the statute, while subdivision 7 requires a request and a court order. And
Why
so.
should we see subdivision 7 as a legislature giving the public the ability to do what it can't under subdivision 15? I mean, I understand you've made the argument that the way the district court applied subdivision 15 and using the definition of public benefit data to decide what that means in subdivision 7 basically obviates or eliminates the meaning of subdivision 7. But why shouldn't we see it as no, the district court is considering that definition, and the public has the ability to do what law enforcement can do under subdivision 15.
Certainly. I think this court's precedents make clear, specifically in the first Energy Policy Advocates decision that we cite in the Data Practices Act, if the legislature wants to do something, the legislature will say so. So if the legislator wanted Subdivision 7 to basically act as a backstop to Subdivision 15, permitting the disclosure of data that maybe law enforcement could have released under those three criteria but decided not to, the legislature would have said that. Instead, what the legislature did was use broad terms within Subdivision 7, giving a lot more opportunity to the public. And I also think it is important that the language of Subdivision 7 is used in other parts of the Data Practices Act where there is no basically accompanying Subdivision 15-like provision. We discuss the Energy Policy Advocates decision in the Court of Appeals dealing with civil investigative data. There's other provisions like in 13.825 subdivision G, there is a option for the public to petition for the release of portable recording device data that is
But
not.
let me ask you this. Would you agree that information that will aid the law enforcement process, promote public safety, and dispel widespread rumor or unrest is information that's beneficial to the public, that is a benefit to the public?
Certainly, Your Honor. There's nothing in the text of Subdivision 7 that says those are the only benefits that can be considered. And that's consistent with other parts of the Data Practices Act that also allows for Subdivision 7 like petitions based on just broad benefit and harms that are not accompanied by some sort of definition cabining what is benefit to public unrest or aiding the law enforcement process.
Well, so and here's one last question, and I'll stop. But I'm just wondering what you make of the last line in the district court's order, because as I understand your argument, you've relied heavily on the idea that the analysis the district court undertook was cabined in the way you just described, and that the district court did not engage in a true weighing. But the last sentence of the memorandum, it is under these facts, the right of an accused in an active criminal proceeding outweigh the public's interest in seeing the body cam footage, only a portion of the evidence in the criminal case prior to trial. The motion for release of the body cam footage is denied. Why wasn't that the exact type of weighing that you're saying the district court should have been engaged in under subdivision 7?
Certainly, Your Honor, that final kind of concluding sentence of the opinion really does not summarize accurately what the district court did in concluding or making the statement that the sort of the public, the benefit, the public's interest in seeing the footage was outweighed. The problem there is that the district court's interpretation of public benefit or what can count as the public benefit under subdivision 7 was extremely limited. So of course it's going to be outweighed by other interests because the district court's opinion basically said that other interests don't count unless they fall under the type of categories in subdivision 15 or in the case of death while in police custody in the other statutory exemptions. And so if we're saying that the benefits asserted by Alpha News are never the kind of things that count, then of course any private harm is going to outweigh that. And that is not a true or genuine balancing test. And it's not what the legislature required and asked courts to do within Subdivision 7.
So let me follow up on that then, because here's a way that I think you could read the opinion or the decision of the district court. I want you to tell me why you think this is wrong. If so, it starts out the public benefit analysis, accurately quoting the provision that the court is supposed to apply about weighing the public benefit against harms to the public, law enforcement, or the subject of the data. Then again on addendum 5 describes the public benefit asserted by Alpha News, which is to reconcile conflicting accounts of the incident as told through the public complaint and Mitchell in her public statements. And without weighing in with how I read that, it seems as though the district court viewed that as a relatively weak interest, right? And is then comparing it against these other public benefits that have been identified in statute, and continues over page 6 and 7 to identify the harms to, potentially tainting the trial, reasons why that would weigh against disclosure. And then I see the point about going into subdivision 15 saying, listen, this is nothing like that. And I think at one point, the court says that it would entirely improper for the court to preempt the natural progress of a case absent true public benefit, as in the law enforcement's public safety widespread rumor, which is the 15. So that as in, like as an example, why isn't that the court identifying an interest, identifying the harms, and then weighing those and saying on these facts, we need something more than what's presented here, maybe akin to subdivision 15.
Certainly, Your Honor. The problem with making the comparison to other sort of cases and examples under some of those other exceptions like subdivision 15 is that it really is a false comparison, and it's raising the bar of what is required for subdivision 7 when subdivision 7 says nothing about widespread rumor or unrest or public safety. It says the benefit. And so there isn't sort of a requirement that it has to be a life or death or threat to safety type harm. And by sort of imposing that requirement on subdivision 7, the legislature is really, or excuse me, the district court is adding words to subdivision 7 that the legislature did not write. The legislature did not require those type of harms, but created a pretty broad safety valve for data to be released in unique and exceptional circumstances like there are in this case. And there's no requirement to compare those to subdivision 15 cases or other cases. And so making that false comparison really puts Alpha News at a disadvantage when, if this case can't satisfy subdivision 7, then what case could that wouldn't otherwise have already resulted in public data under a different provision of the Data Practices Act? And I would just add briefly that the district court's decision also in raising the bar and making it harder to meet subdivision 7 by those comparisons really goes against this court's decision in the Prairie Island, or then that we generally construe the Data Practices Act in favor of disclosure. And so by construing the act in basically in favor of keeping data private, that is also goes against this court's precedents as well. And I see that I'm out of time.
So you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Ramstedt Squiles.
Yes, Your Honor. May I begin?
Go ahead. Thank you.
Yes. My name is Dylan Ramstedt Squiles, and I represent City of Detroit Lakes, the respondents. I would just like to apologize for my earlier jumping the gun on how to refer to me. You can refer to me as Dylan or Mr. Ramstedt Squiles, however you feel comfortable.
Thank you.
I'd like to kind of begin with Judge Bentley's question and how to read the to the appellant on how I read the memorandum, and I tend to agree that it seems to me that the district court judge looked at the other statutes as reasons where the legislature has already admitted that the public benefit or the public interest clearly outweighs any issue, and uses that to kind of formulate her weighing and how she weighs the subdivision 7 requirements. She spends in her memorandum 2.5 to 3 pages weighing the public interest based upon how she felt that the legislature wanted that to happen. And actually, at the district
council, level, as a preliminary matter, can you address the appellant's argument in the reply brief? Why should this court consider your argument, given that it seems that at the district court, you supported the position of the appellant and supported, or at least didn't object to the release of the footage? And now you're in essence switching that argument. Why should this court at this stage consider this argument from you and not deem it waived?
At the district court level, we didn't take a position on the release of this body cam footage, and that is correct. We asked the judge to make a decision. We asked the judge to make findings as to why that decision, if she released the footage or if she didn't release the footage, as to why she did or did not do that. She did that. She wrote a decision, and now we are defending that decision. I think that it's important to, when you ask a judge to make a decision and defend that and make an argument as to why that decision was made, it's important to then defend what we asked her to do. She did what we asked her to do. She made a decision. She wrote down how she made that decision and the factors that she considered when making that decision.
Counsel, regarding those factors, can you address appellant's argument? And in that sense, it seems to me the argument is that the district court, in utilizing Section 16, in essence, raised the floor of what they should be considering, that there were factors that appellant presented to the court that were not considered in the balancing test. Can you address that argument?
I think that in my opinion, when she uses Section 15 and 13.82, the factors in 13.825, she's using the district court is using those factors as ways to look at the arguments of the appellant and not necessarily and saying that here the legislature has weighed the public in that has suggested the public interest clearly outweighs any harm. And that in those factors, it's an automatic release. So the legislature has already given us that those areas. Where are the factors here in relation to that? And the district court found that they didn't meet even or come close to that area, and therefore she denied the release of the footage.
That's not
Counsel.
exactly what she said, though, right? She said the statute does not authorize the release of the data the public finds interesting. And the district court goes on to say it requires release of data that is necessary to dispel widespread rumor or unrest, circumstances that are not present here. So to Judge Harris's point and to appellant's point, it seems like the district court's raised the floor there by limiting her view just to those circumstances as public benefits rather than considering anything else. What do we do with that?
Again, I think that she, while that is the ending paragraph of her argument, she spends most of that argument way discussing how the factors, this factor, or the facts in this case, are weighed against the other fact of how they stack up to areas where the legislature has deemed the public interest clearly outweighing. And I think that she is just pointing out that like in subdivision 15, those factors are clearly outweighed and we don't meet those burdens either. I think that she spends most of her decision talking about how there's a, weighing the balance of the public interest.
I'm sorry, I interrupted Judge Harris. Did you have another question?
No, you can go ahead and continue, counsel.
Go ahead.
I think that overall, it's important to, at the district court level, the district court asked multiple questions, all related to the public interest. And she then, in my reading of the opinion, she then spends most of the time dispelling that, talking about how, weighing the benefits of the public interest. And, even, the subdivision 7 says that we're supposed to weigh, the benefit to the person bringing the action or the public outweighs the harm to the public, agency, or any person identified in the data. And the throughout the district court's memorandum, she weighs the benefit to the person bringing the action, the public, against any harm to the public, the agency, or person identified in the data. And I think it's important to point out that in the one of the people identified in the data is Miss Mitchell, who is currently facing criminal charges, and a fact that the district court doesn't take lightly, as pointed out in her memorandum.
Can I ask you a question just in response to appellant's argument that, in effect, the district court, as I understand their position, the district court kind of imported the public benefit language or definition? I mean, I don't know if I'll call it definition, but the examples of public benefits in subdivision 15 into 7. So I guess my question for you is, on your reading of subdivision seven, are there public benefits that are less than those identified in 15 that are not as strong or as clear or, you know, reach to the level of what was described or otherwise different that would serve as a public benefit for purposes of subdivision seven, even if they wouldn't under 15?
In all honesty, I am not sure. I can, off the top of my head, I cannot think of any situations, but I also can't think of situations that subdivision 15 might only have, but or would that subdivision 715, sorry, would deem releasable on its own as well. I think that those are situations of a fact, right? And I'm not sure. I think that it because it's a balancing test, it's fact specific, and because of that, I don't really have any off the top of my head, and I apologize.
Can I ask you? So, isn't one of the problems, you know, just turning away from the importing of subdivision 15 to subdivision 7? Isn't one of the problems that it seems the appellant has identified is that the analysis that the district court undertook in balancing the public interest doesn't really focus on the fact that the person who is a defendant in this action is a sitting state senator. So if you look at the entire public interest section, it focuses on the rights of the accused. And obviously those are important and those need to be balanced in weighing the public interest. And as you point out in your brief, the right of the state to make the, you know, to have a fair trial and to do this to execute this prosecution correctly. But the public's interest in this case, from appellant's standpoint, as I understand it, is not just because this is any accused, it's because this person is a sitting state senator. What do we do with that in applying the abuse of discretion standard? Why isn't that the failure to weigh that in deciding public benefit? Why isn't that an abuse of discretion?
I think that the court, and albeit briefly, discusses the fact that she is, you know, that because she is a senator doesn't necessarily make her ability to have a, you know, doesn't lessen her rights as an individual to a fair trial, and that those rights are so high that the interest of her just being a sitting Minnesota state senator doesn't rise to those bars. The, you know, at the district court, there was a discussion about, there was a lengthy discussion about how she was, you know, Ms. Mitchell was a sitting senator and how that provided some public interest. And there was a multitude of material provided in the complaint and supplemental material about that. And I think that the court looked at that. They might not have written extensively on it.
Over counsel, it seems to me that they looked at the fact that she was a sitting senator only for the purpose of the harm, that being that just because she's a senator, that does not mean that she doesn't have a right to a fair trial. It seems to me that the appellant's argument is that the public has a benefit in having a functioning legislature that is not gripped in unrest based on the fact that there is a open question as to whether or not this individual will remain a senator given the discrepancies in the story. Is it abuse of discretion for the court? And as I read the opinion, there's really not much discussion as it relates to the public's benefit in having information to the Senate to the legislature so that they can function as kind of having a functioning government. Is it abuse of discretion for the court not to address the public benefit in having a functioning legislature?
I think that as at the district court, as the appellant pointed out, that the fact that the video will not show everything that happened, right? It doesn't provide all the facts of this case. that is a job for the jury or the court in the criminal case to decide what
But
the
counsel,
facts.
that goes to the criminal case. Isn't there a function or a need for this information for the legislature in their own process, aside from the criminal case, to make a determination so that that process can function? And did the court properly weigh that benefit in opposition to obviously the benefit to Senator Mitchell and having a fair trial?
I believe in my reading of the opinion, when she's discussing about when the court is discussing where, that how she has a right to a fair trial and that right is great, that's when she is weighing that benefit. I know that in the decision, she doesn't again go into great detail on that, and I'm not sure. She outright says it, but I.
So if she doesn't outright say that, does that not bolster the appellant's argument that she, in essence, cabined the argument in the context of Section 15, excuse me, Section 15, thus eliminating and not discussing a benefit to the public that should have been weighed?
I think that again, I'll go back to, I don't think that she is, in a broad sense, using Section 15 as this is the factors. I think she, in her decision.
However, counsel, I recognize that we can extrapolate that and perhaps from that, but the clear language she uses is a language from Section 15. So if she uses a language from Section 15, how can you argue that she has not cabined the argument in the language that she specifically uses in her order?
I see that I'm out of time. May I answer the question?
Yes, go ahead and answer.
Okay. I using the language of Section 15, I think is the district court explaining how she came to her decision, and that she not, doesn't necessarily use just Section 15, but uses the sections the statutes as a whole when making that decision.
Any other questions? Seeing no other questions, thank you. Counsel for appellant, 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Ms. Hall, not to cut you off right from this, because I want to hear your points, but just before you get into it, I wonder if you could address one question for me, which is that the statute provides that any investigative data that is presented as evidence shall be public. I'm wondering how you read that provision in the event that body cam footage is that you're requesting is used in a trial. Would it become public? And I guess, ultimately, is there a chance that the issues in this case would become moot, assuming you would renew a request or get the data that you're looking for here?
Certainly, Your Honor. To address your question, I think that is the right reading of the statute, that once any of the, there's a, Alpha News has requested all of the data from the events of April 22nd involving Senator Mitchell's arrest. And so some of that data may very well be admitted as evidence in trial and then would become public data under Subdivision 7. It's speculative at this point to assume that all of the data Alpha News requested will be admitted as evidence to trial. And so there's still potentially some other data that will give the public a more full picture of what happened and increase accountability for parties on both sides, both the Detroit Lakes Police Department and Senator Mitchell, that Alpha News would like to publicize as a member of the press. So that there still is potentially that data. And I think more importantly, Alpha News really is seeking to clarify the legal standard for Subdivision 7. As we've explained, that the district court really raised the bar on what counts for Subdivision 7. And this has implications beyond this case. I believe there are other kind of ongoing disputes in Minneapolis regarding
Wouldn't
requests.
that, just because your time is short, I think, if we're going to go down that path, we would probably need some supplemental briefing from you on why the mootness exceptions wouldn't or would apply, because it's a pretty fact-specific inquiry under Subdivision 7, as you argue throughout your brief, specific to the facts of this case. So, obviously, I know you use the term investigative data, but what's before us is limited to the body cam. So I think we would need to know if that does happen before our decision is issued, whether or not there remains a live controversy here, so that we're not issuing an advisory opinion just on how to apply Subdivision 7 when there's not really anything to decide specific to the facts of this case.
Certainly, Your Honor. This is a classic example of a situation that's capable of repetition yet evading review. These requests can naturally get timed out, even though Alpha News filed this request pretty much immediately after Senator Mitchell's arrest. It has taken 7 months to get to
And I
this.
don't mean to, and you can continue that argument. I don't know that you need to do that right now because it, as you pointed out, it's speculative at this point whether or not that will happen. I think my only point is that it would be beneficial for the parties to notify the court if that does happen and then to present the argument that it sounds like you want to present on that.
Certainly, Your Honor, we'll be sure to do that. Briefly, then, with the time I have left, I just would like to first address waiver. Respondents did not take a position below and stated as much just now. Going from no position to taking a position is a change in position, which
But
this.
throughout your brief, when you cite those cases, you're talking about parties that are seeking relief that didn't make an argument below. The respondent is not seeking relief. They're defending the district court's decision. And in, many other contexts, the party is able to defend the district court's decision even if they didn't raise an argument below. And we can affirm on any ground that's apparent from the record, wouldn't you agree?
Certainly, this court can affirm on any ground in the record. As the point is from, I think, from Minnesota's Supreme Court decision, Thiel v. Stitch, is that the principle of party representation requires that parties make arguments, not judges. And it's improper for respondents to kind of ride the coattails of the district court's judgments and make new arguments and introduce new facts on appeal without presenting them below. And just with the time I have left, I would just like to point out there was some discussion with respondents about what the public finds interesting. And I that is part of the public benefit. There's nothing in the common meeting of Subdivision 7 to exclude that from the public benefit. And because Senator Mitchell is a sitting senator, there's extreme public benefit to what is interesting to the public in both holding her accountable and helping the legislature move forward in our responsive government, where the representatives are responsive to what constituents bring to them, which they get from the news. And so Alpha News respectfully requests this court reverse the district court and authorize the disclosure of the data.
Thank you to both counsel for your helpful arguments. The matter is deemed submitted. We will issue an opinion in the statutory time frame.